but we need to have the wealth to do that. And I think silver's got this unique ability of transferring our wealth outside of this, you know, whatever this Ponzi scheme is going on now, into silver, and hopefully into a much better way of life for America, because we are going to get reborn again, and freedom has to come from America. So I don't know any other way of having freedom thrive again if we can't take our wealth outside the system and reinvest it into something better.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. I'm Kenneth Amadori, and I'm joined today with a returning guest, someone with a very popular YouTube channel and an authority in the silver space. And obviously, we're seeing a lot of excitement right now. Silver hit $30 this week, which was a real threshold. Last night, actually, we're recording this on August 7th, 2020. I have Chris Duane on the line. The YouTube channel is The Greatest Truth Never Told. His website is silvershieldexchange.com. We'll have the links in the description area. Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show today and to share your knowledge with us with what's going on in these fast-moving markets.
Yeah, it's crazy times out there, and I think it's only going to get worse over the next couple months with the election closing in, all the debate over stimulus and the ramifications of the bankruptcies and the foreclosure crisis and the unemployment that all hit in March. I think that we're a nation that's in complete denial of what actually happened in March. And as the governments respond by more money printing of money that we do not have, it's going to set off a hyperinflation, I think, globally, because the entire world's on the exact same debt-based fiat Ponzi scheme. And this is why precious metals, especially silver, are such a vital way of protecting your wealth, because every time they print more money, it destroys the purchasing power of not only our savings, but also our income. People don't realize that. And that's why we're going to see it most noticeably in our food inflation first. And then just the cost of living overall, it's going to make it very difficult for people to keep up as the government continues to print money and pay off, you know, all the insiders that, you know, obviously have the ears of our politicians. So silver is really, I think, the only way of defending your wealth against the money printing that's going to happen globally.
Well, and the good news is now we're actually seeing metals prices rise, and that's getting the attention of a lot of people, because I think before it was a lot of talk. At least that's what people felt. And now seeing the rising prices, confirmation that, hey, something is really happening. And, you know, guys like us who've been talking about precious metals for years have a little more credibility. Like, hey, you know, this is actually happening, and the things in the economy are actually setting in, and they're affecting the price of gold and silver. Now, before we get into silver too deeply, or maybe we'll start here, I'd like to get your thoughts on why silver, because you're someone who isn't really a fan of gold, for that matter. Most people are a fan of gold, no. And as a derivative, they like silver as well because of its correlation and its relationship. But with you, Chris, you like silver only. So
yes,
let's start there.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the way I look at the global landscape and what you and I have been talking about for well over a decade is that the world is literally run on a fiat Ponzi scheme, that they create money out of thin air. It's all debt-based, so every dollar that comes into existence, there's a dollar's worth of debt. And because the system is based off of a fractional reserve system, we have to create more debt every year in excess of the debt and interest accrued the year before, or we have a deflationary crash. And the people that own and control the system do not want that, so they will always continue to print more money that we don't have. And it's a subtle way of stealing wealth from the average people out there. You know, when every time that they print $1 trillion out of thin air, you and I and all the other people that we know have to work tremendously to create that wealth. And some Momo at the Federal Reserve and the Treasury prints that up and pays off their banking buddies and the military industrial complex and the media, you know, and the corporations and all that other stuff. They all get that money there, but we are the ones that have to go out and kind of create that. So when you realize that our very currency is a debt-based fiat Ponzi scheme, you know, so too is a derivative of the stock market, the bond market, the real estate market, all the other asset classes out there that you look at, they're all a derivative of that debt-based Ponzi scheme. Well, if we're into a currency crisis where the actual dollar itself is declining in value as they're printing more and more of it, there's very few real places to put your wealth outside the banking system. It's not real estate, you know, because without, you know, 30-year mortgages at 2%, you know, what's your house worth, you know? And if the local governments get desperate and raise your property taxes, it's even a harder place to store your wealth. And when you get down to it, there's only commodities. And then when you look at commodities, Not all the commodities are easily stored. I mean, food is a commodity, oil is a commodity, but how are you going to store, you know, millions of dollars worth of oil or, you know, food and stuff? So it brings it back down to the precious metals, because, you know, even the larger metals like copper and ore, you know, iron ore, it's too hard to store thousands of dollars worth of it. You know, I think it's like $5,000 for a ton of copper. You can't store that, which brings it down to gold and silver, right? And then once you get down to the gold and silver, you realize that gold is overvalued relative to silver. I'm not saying gold's worthless, but why would you own a puddle, a little teeny coin of gold, when you could have 76 ounces of silver that has all the same qualities as gold, as a monetary metal, as, you know, a form of divisible metal that you can do. But silver has 10,000 industrial uses that gold simply does not have. Gold is really just a gaudy, you know, metal that's used for jewelry for the most part and stored as money. But when you realize that silver has all those same qualities, in fact, it has more uses as money throughout the ages, as silver has always been the monetary money of the people, because gold is too soft and ductile. It's not really good for coins and, to trade and stuff. And, you know, it's used for jewelry. But our way of life is impossible without silver. You know, you think about all of our technology, the electric cars that are coming, the solar power, it's got antimicrobial, it's got anti-cancer uses. Certainly all the high-tech companies are all silver intensive, and all the tech companies. And silver is, to me, the king of all metals. I think gold has had this reign for 5,000 years as this kind of like preeminent, money to be held by the very wealthy. But that's who owns it all now. I mean, Goldman Sachs, the banksters, the criminal elite, the people that own and control the system, they own gold and they've suppressed silver. So I think silver is going to lead to the largest transference of wealth ever as the world realizes that these currencies in itself are bad. The stock market and the bond market and the real estate market, where most people have their wealth, are dangerous at best, and that they're going to go down Exeter's pyramid into gold, and then they're eventually going to figure out silver. And I think that once people get to understand the silver story, it's a no-brainer situation. Like, why wouldn't you want to have silver? Even as insurance, you know, just even if I'm wrong, just a little portion of your wealth in physical silver, I think, is a smart thing to do.
Right. No, I like that. Now let's talk about this industrial component of silver. And that's a big thing for people. 60% of silver's usage is industrial. And so does that bother you at all? And, you know, maybe shed some light on why. I know it doesn't bother you. Why doesn't it bother you?
Well, number one, just recently, I mean, the mining globally has dropped off 50%. We've actually reached peak silver in 2015. So that means every year since 2015, we've been pulling less and less silver out of the ground because it's a depleting resource. But most recently, over this past year, Mexico and Peru are completely offline mining silver. And those are the number one, number two silver miners in the world, mainly because of COVID. So I'm not really worried about the industrial demand drop off of the global economy, mainly because silver is used in all these high tech industries that, regardless what comes after this, we know that there's going to be more tech, and if there's any government stimulus, they're going to use it for green energy projects, you know, either solar, electrification, or whatever, and that's going to be even more silver intensive. So we're in a declining silver production globally, accentuated by this COVID thing, shutting down a lot of the big silver mines in Mexico and Peru, and for going forward, it keeps having more and more uses. Like, you know, 10 years ago, we really didn't have a solar power industry. We didn't have electric cars. Even the tech industry, cell phones are not even that old. I remember getting my first cell phone, not a decade ago. And now we're using silver in such small quantities that even for these big companies like Apple and Samsung or, you know, Google that are going to be, or Tesla that are using all the silver, it's used in such small quantities that it doesn't really reflect the overall price thing of what these companies are using it for. If an Apple computer may use a tenth of an ounce of silver, if silver goes from, you know, $10 up to $1,000, it doesn't reflect all that much in the overall cost of the company, of the product. So the companies are going to suck it up no matter what it is. What I am most concerned about is at some point, and I think it's going to happen this September, more people are going to ask for delivery on physical silver then the market's going to be able to demand. There's a huge upswing in physical demand from the PSLV, which is Eric Sprott's SLV ETF. I think he's, you know, looking to get 1 billion ounces of silver. There isn't enough out there for that. And I think the more that people realize that this is a death spiral of the dollar, there's very few places to go, and that the big money is going to move in. I think it's an absolute eye of the hurricane for silver investors to get ahead of this curve.
That's powerful. Now, you mentioned something, you know, silver having the same and better usage than gold. But you think the reason why we're not using gold is because it just got priced out of the industrial market. So arguably, couldn't silver price itself out ultimately? And would there be another replacement for silver if need be?
I mean, potentially, but at what price? And, you know, we're sitting at $30 silver. What price would that happen? $1,000 silver? I'll be more than happy to ride that all the way up there. I mean, that's a huge thing. You know, there's some talk about graphene being more useful, but right now graphene, I mean, it's thousands of dollars per gram. You know, I mean, it's a huge expense just to do that. And yeah, maybe over time that they're able to do it over, you know, make it more efficient. But, you know, quite honestly, silver has unique properties that will never be replaced. I mean, it's literally the king of all metals. It has the most versatile commodity in the world, not just metals, except for oil. Oil is the only other commodity that has more uses for humanity. So it is an absolute vital commodity that we have been treating as just garbage. I mean, we treat it as if it's less than an ounce of pizza. I mean, it's ridiculous to me that we have silver so cheap, considering, you know, how many tons of earth that you have to move and, you know, find it and refine it. I mean, it's a noble metal, and it's the only one that isn't in four digits. You know, all the other noble metals are all traded at four digit prices, and so here's silver at $30. It's a huge opportunity for people who can recognize it.
Mm. Yeah, I love it. So does the gold silver ratio mean much to you? A lot of people are talking about 30-1 gold to silver, and, you know, Bank of America has already put a $3,000 price target on gold. So 30-1 puts silver at $100, which is pretty exciting considering where we're at. But I know you think it might go a lot higher than that. But what are your thoughts on gold and silver as it pertains to the ratio?
Well, I think since you and I have been talking, I mean, it's gold and silver ratio has been going anywhere from 70 up to 120 this spring, where gold was really bought up by the main central banks of the world. You have to realize most of the big banks in the world, you know, China, Russia, and all these other countries who are trying to worry about the dollar, they've been buying up gold, but they've been completely ignorant of the whole silver story. So the gold to silver ratio has steadily gone up. And now, ever since, you know, silver's caught wind over these past couple weeks, the gold to silver ratio has collapsed, but it's still relatively high. I think it's at 1-75. Here's one thing I want your subscribers to know. Gold to silver comes out of our ground at a 1-9 ratio. For every 1 ounce of gold, there's only 9 ounces of silver. So silver is a very rare metal. Like, as much as you would think that gold is very rare, silver is just as rare. Now, historically, it's been a 1-16 ratio. Basically, you know, a couple hundred years ago, that was what the mining ratio was. Then it dropped to 1-12, and now we're down to 1-9 as the silver stockpiles. And I mentioned before that the silver peak silver happened in 2015. It's only going to get worse. It's going to keep dropping as silver becomes more rare relative to the gold that comes out of the ground. But the way I look at it is, if it's at a 1-90 ratio, which is what it was, you know, a week ago, regardless of what price of gold does, I'm not saying gold is overvalued, you know, in the global economy. I'd rather own gold relative to any other digital illusion of wealth out there. You know, if you're measuring your wealth based off of the digits on your phone, you're in deep trouble when this all goes down. But regardless of whatever the price of gold does, I think silver is going to outperform gold at least 10-1 as the gold to silver ratio collapses to at least the mining ratio, what it comes out of the ground. But it actually gets worse than that, because the above ground stockpiles of gold, you have to think about it, all the gold that's ever been mined in the world has been treasured and stored and kept there. All the silver that's been mined has been basically used as an industrial commodity that we don't really care about, and the silver stockpiles have declined to the point now that there's more identifiable gold ounces above ground than there is silver. So I can make a case that gold to silver ratio can drop to single digits, if not parity. And I think that's where the big opportunity for people who recognize this, just on a ratio basis, that silver has far more upside potential than owning any gold.
So you mentioned Sprott's account, PSLV, the allocated silver. You know, do you talk about the problem, if you would, maybe of someone wanting to get exposure to the price action of silver and buying something like an SLV ETF. Is that something you would recommend to anybody?
No, I don't want any digital illusions of wealth. I wouldn't recommend anything that I don't do. I only stack physical silver. I mean, Eric Sprott's a good guy, but you know, all of his silver is stored at the Royal Canadian Mint. The Royal Canadian Mint's owned by the Queen of England. So, you know, all she would have to do is just sign a decree and, you know, Eric's out his silver and so is everybody else. My real concern is the SLV, where most people, invest in, and that I don't think that they have the physical silver to back up all the shares that they have. I mean, it makes no sense to me that they're able to add tens of millions of ounces of physical silver when I know how tight the real physical silver market is because of what I do with my Silver Shield and Golden State Mint. It's very difficult to source silver, much less huge amounts of it. And I think that a lot of people are going to end up finding out that this digital silver that they have is really just that, just digital silver, not the real thing. And when we get into a currency crisis, that's all that's going to matter is how the, you know, if you have physical silver or not, everything else is just going to be a digital illusion of it. And that's the real risk that I see globally.
You know, Chris, we saw a really exciting move, I think, with gold over the last month or so, going through its all-time high, right? And, you know, going over $2,000. And then silver hitting $30 here, very material considering it's just been in the teens for the longest time, you know, having a real hard time going over 18 and then, you know, hitting its head on the wall of 2179 and then obviously going right through that. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the move we've seen. I know I don't like to focus on price too much, but I think this quick move we've seen is something that I think people should get used to because yeah. I think we are going to see big moves. And I fear that people are going to sell too early because they're not used to seeing the metals go up. So maybe you could speak to that a little bit.
That's an excellent point. I'm so glad that you brought that up. The way I try to talk to my people on the Greatest Truth Never Told on YouTube is to recognize that this is not something that you're getting into just to make more dollars. The reason why you're getting into silver is because we're afraid of the dollar's purchasing power going forward. And I constantly use the Venezuelan example. Venezuela obviously has had a huge hyperinflation, but in 2010, it took 60 bolivars to buy 1 ounce of silver. And if you were a Venezuelan and you saw that Chavez was there and you had this socialistic president that was going to print money out of thin air and destroy the purchasing power, and you bought silver at 60 bolivars and say silver went up to 600 bolivars, right? You'd have been like, oh, I made 10 times my money. But had you sold at $600 bolivar, you would be devastated because do you know what the cost of 1 ounce of silver now is in bolivars? 7.2 million bolivars. Like if you sold at 600 bolivars and now you would have to come back with 7.2 million bolivars to buy the same ounce of silver, you would have been devastated. I don't think that we're going to have that dramatic of an example in the United States because the United States is a much bigger market. But the key is not to trade out, you know, physical ounces for dollars when we didn't want dollars in the first place. I mean, I've been buying silver for the last 15 years simply because I've been concerned about the idea that governments and the Federal Reserve can print unlimited amount of money. I mean, we're going to run a $5 trillion deficit this year. The government's going to spend $10 trillion. Nearly half of the United States economy is going to come from the government. This does not end well. And this is just the beginning. Wait until the ramifications of all these unemployment and bankruptcies and foreclosures start really happening after the election starts coming. God forbid we get a Biden administration that starts raising taxes on, you know, on whatever wealth is left. They're going to print even more. You know, the Republicans are talking about another $1 trillion of deficit spending that we don't have. Well, the Democrats want to do $3.1 trillion. So the way I look at it is silver is the best way of protecting your wealth outside the system. You can take your wealth outside the banking system. You don't have to worry about the inflation because it's going to be reflected in the price of it. And use silver as a means of making it through to the other side. And I don't quite know what that's going to be, but you know, I think silver is going to be the best place to be until then.
Chris, what are your thoughts on being a borrower in this environment with the inflation going out of control? Maybe not something to the degree of Venezuela or Zimbabwe, but just some sort of really high inflation. I mean, if you owe $150,000, yeah, $200,000 of debt, and they, mm-hmm, hyperinflate your currency, and you know, all of a sudden now you're getting paid triple and quadruple what you made before, but maybe your purchasing power still sucks. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good for the money that you need to pay off, though, right?
Yes. So a lot of silver stackers kind of get in a twist about me with when it comes to debt. You know, a lot of people are like, pay off your debt and then buy silver. I'm like, no. Debt, as long as it's, you know, locked in and it's not a variable rate or, you know, a credit card debt. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want anybody having 24% credit card interest and thinking that they're going to, you know, go buy silver. But if your debt is locked in, like a mortgage, yeah, silver, don't pay off your mortgage, but stack silver, because just like in the Venezuelan example, if your mortgage in Venezuelan bolivars was 300,000 bolivars, you know, and now your ounce of silver is worth 7.2 million bolivars, you just paid off your mortgage with what? A quarter ounce of silver. That's what ends up happening. So, I'm not a fan of paying off debt to stack silver, because inflation's benefit those that have debt and have real assets like silver, but does not benefit people who have paid off debt and do not have real assets. So, it's a game that I think a lot of people have to look at their own sense of risk. I'm not one to encourage people to take on debt, but quite honestly, people have taken on, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loans on these, you know, diplomas that are worth nothing. People naturally go out and buy cars that depreciate worse than anything else, houses and, you know, what other consumer goods. But you know, for physical silver at these prices, I mean, people have taken a lot of worse debt to buy other things that are worth less. So, you know, everybody's got to make their own judgment call.
Yeah, it's definitely a balance and something you need to be comfortable with, because nobody knows the timing exactly on how long this will be. And you can, of course, lose your assets by taking on debt, having a job change, having an income problem, unable to service the debt, and then lose everything, right? So,
but one of the best things about silver is that, you know, regardless of whatever happens to the housing market, silver allows you to take that wealth anywhere you want. You know, this is something that can be literally hidden for generations. If you think like a pirate, you know, you can do it whatever, but most people can't take their, move their house. If things are bad, you can't really transport your wealth. If your money is inside of a bank and the bank goes bad, or the actual currency itself goes bad, you're really SOL. And then how do we start over again? This is another thing I try to remind people. The overall global economy is changing to more further concentration of wealth. Those people that are making a ton of money right now, are going to be in charge of robotics and technology. Like, most people really don't have the skills anymore to really create wealth themselves. You know, we used to have a very big labor pool where we needed a lot of labor to go create all the manufactured goods, and that really helps sustain a middle class. But that's all getting destroyed right now, and it's slowly being done. And I don't think most people are recognizing it. So this might be the last chance to transfer your labor and your wealth outside the system into a doomed paradigm that will no longer benefit the average working man.
So in the average home, let's say, costs $200,000. Let's say the average person makes $50,000 a year. I think there's something along those lines. That's 4 years of income to purchase a house. Now, do you think, in your opinion, with what the world is about to see, that's going to change? The amount of effort it's going to take in terms of work, you think it'll stay at around 4 years of annual income, and in relation to what's going to happen to the dollar, what's going to happen to the economy in hyperinflation? Because I just want to get your thoughts on, you know, do you believe real estate to be a store of wealth, or do you think it's going to collapse to maybe something where people can buy with 1 year's worth of income?
Yeah, I think for my silver stackers who listen to my channel, the goal that I would be looking for is 1 ounce of silver for an acre of arable land. There's 8 billion arable acres of land above ground, and there's only an estimated 1 to 2 billion ounces of physical silver, which is actually less than that. But yeah, housing prices right now are in a bubble because we're still in denial of what has actually happened to the underlying economy. I mean, just think about New York City. New York City was this bastion. It's the, I mean, it's the most popular city in the United States. It's the, you know, where Wall Street is and Madison Avenue and, you know, all these bars and restaurants and, you know, millionaires buying $54 million mansions and stuff like that. With COVID now and what's going on, like, what's commercial real estate worth anymore? Like, you have Amazon that's destroyed all of these commercial real estate. And then you have, you know, maybe the restaurants that are out there. I mean, I think half the restaurants in Manhattan are never going to open up again. You know, and then all the jobs that are leaving, like, I mean, they're talking about a 500,000 people have already left Manhattan with no plans of ever coming back. Then throw in de Blasio with, you know, this BLM and defund the police and, you know, violence and graffiti, and they're putting homeless people in thing. I mean, it's literally going to destroy the value of all of Manhattan. And that's going to be reflective of all the other cities out there, San Francisco and Chicago. These are failed city states. They're no longer a viable thing. If you kind of look at it, like, the cities were really like hardware, and the operating system was more debt and more people coming into these centralized cities. And now that the COVID has hit, even the biggest corporations that have built these huge complexes like Apple and Google, and they have these huge campuses, they're letting their people work from home. So, you know, what happens to just real estate markets out there? And then, you know, all the small businesses, because they've been shut down, I mean, these guys are going to be devastated. So there's going to be a plethora of all this commercial real estate. We've already been watching these malls collapse. That's just a real estate market. That's the commercial real estate market. When that gets reflected into the real jobs and people being able to, you know, afford their homes, I don't see how it would get any better. So I would imagine that the prices of and then the local governments, they're going to start taxing, you know, the properties, because that's all that's left. And it's going to make it even a worse situation. So my suggestion is, number one, if you live in any major metropolitan area, please get out now before it turns into a humanitarian crisis, because this is what's going to happen before the dollar crisis happens. Once we have a dollar crisis and, you know, potentially we have, you know, outright, you know, wars and, you know, more disruptions and stuff, it's going to be harder and harder for those cities to maintain power and electricity and sense of order. And, you know, certainly the capital appreciation that's been built up in there. And then anybody who's smart moves outside the cities. And I think the major metropolitan areas are going to be the absolute worst places to be when the dollar goes down.
Yeah. I have some real estate in Florida, and I've been following that specifically. Mm-hmm. I have some real estate in different parts of the country. But as far as Florida in particular, I have some tenants that have not made a single payment. They were late already going into the crisis, and then they got the moratorium. So, I mean, they're banking month after month after month of not making their rent payment. And they got another month, because it was all supposed to end in August, where the eviction was supposed to happen. And these people were taking advantage. I mean, they're getting the stimulus payments and, you know, a lot of things. And they're like, oh, you know what? Let's ride it out and make the best of it.
And then you take the hit, you know, like.
That's right. That's right. So that's, and so I think about it, I step back and I go, man, you know, how is it even possible for them to make a back payment on all this money that they owe? I mean, thousands of dollars now. And that's what we're seeing. Like, that's a micro scale of what this whole entire economy has been experiencing over the last few months. And I just wonder what this fallout is going to look like here as we go into September, October. I mean, the only thing I can think of is just these spending packages that are just going to continue to string this along. But how long can that go on for?
Well, it's going to go on until it doesn't. And that's what I've been preparing for. I don't know how this ends or where it does, but I definitely know that silver is going to be the only place to left standing at the end of the day. You know, you can walk down all the asset classes out there. You know, you can go from derivatives and cryptos, you know, these kind of amorphous, you know, kind of niche markets, to the stock market, to the bond market. I think 60% of all the bonds are yielding negative rates. Like, that alone is a screaming case for gold and silver. Why would you own a bond that, you know, you have to pay to own? And then, you know, you worry about just the overall printing of all these, all the money out there. The very currencies itself, I mean, they're talking about the dollar depreciating 60% against what? Other failed currencies out there? That seems to me that, like, the only places to be are gold and silver. And like I laid out earlier in the interview, when you look at the fundamentals of silver over gold, why would you even own an ounce of gold? I own 1 ounce of gold. That's it, for display purposes only. You know, but I have all my money in physical silver, and I know I'm highly biased. I've, you know, I'm probably the ultimate silver bug out there, since I've been pounding the table for as long as I have. But I believe that physical silver is going to be the only place to be at the end of the day. It's kind of like the eye of the needle. You know, all the other wealth is going to have to find a way of mark to market. And I just don't see how with governments, you know, spending, at least the United States spending $10 trillion. I mean, we, you know, the Republicans used to rail against Obama for $1 trillion deficits. Fuck, they're nothing compared to what we're going on now. We got $5 trillion deficits.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people, and I've been talking about this with different individuals, you know, silver's leveraged upside to gold. And my goodness, your thoughts on silver's upside is impressive. And I mm-hmm. love hearing the analysis and you make the case for it. But is there something that you sell into again, I know you love silver, but at yeah. some point it goes so high. Do you put it into something that maybe you think might be less volatile? The conventional wisdom might be, hey, I still want to own precious metals. Silver is your leveraged exposure. When silver goes yep. to 30 to 1, 15 to 1, I'm going to sell my silver and buy gold.
My exit strategy, and I've been thinking about this for 15 years, my exit strategy is to realize that the current paradigm is going to fail, that silver at some point is going to be worth tremendously more relative. Like in the video I did today, I talked about how the Dow to gold ratio in 1980 was 1. 1 ounce of gold cost $850, and the Dow was actually $850. So I look at valuations based off not dollar terms. Like, I don't care if silver goes to 1,000 or whatever. I want to know what that is relative without the dollar to gold, to the Dow, to real estate, to other assets out there. And my plan is essentially that when silver becomes overvalued and that the rest of the world wakes up to the silver story, you have to realize we are such a small little teeny community that even notices silver. I mean, even gold is very rarely mentioned in major media, and silver never gets mentioned. But wait until silver gets past $50, $100, and we start getting major media that actually look at the price of silver. It's going to explode exponentially. But my exit strategy is at some point I will want to get out of silver. But I'm never going to sell my silver. At some point, what I would like to do is, when silver is valued a lot more, I would like to borrow against my silver at a highly appreciated level, because I think there's going to be a permanent revaluation of silver because it's been manipulated for so long that the rest of the humanity is going to start valuing silver at a much higher level permanently, because it is a depleting, rare, precious resource that needs to have a higher value to bring on more mining supply and wiser use of it instead of us throwing it away that we are. But I would like to borrow against my silver and then buy, you know, these depreciated assets, you know, buy houses and businesses and technology and labor that are, you know, have been absolutely devastated by the economic crisis. And then, you know, build, you know, you'll have income producing property. So you can borrow against your silver, which is highly appreciated, whether we have silver banks or, you know, they have these crypto funds that are, you know, you can back it with crypto or whatever. But you monetize your silver. You don't actually sell it. So then, therefore, you're also potentially even avoiding any sales tax or income tax against the highly appreciated silver. When you borrow against it, it's not a taxable event. Borrow against your silver and buy these depreciated assets, you know, businesses and local houses and stuff that will actually, you know, yield income from there. And at a much lower level, you know, because you'll probably have PEs, you know, in the single digits at that point. And then those assets will pay back your silver loan. And then, you know, potentially in 1 to 2 or 5 years, you have all your silver and income producing properties or income producing, you know, businesses that are now at the, you know, starting to grow again, because we are going to grow again, but we definitely need a complete washout. We haven't had the cleansing of any of these recessions. We keep getting bailed out. We need the washout. So all these bad investments and bad actors get, you know, punished. We haven't felt it from the tech bubble. We didn't feel it from the housing bubble. We didn't feel it even now. We're still getting bailed out. So I think there's going to be a massive washout, and silver's going to be the best way of transferring your wealth from one side to the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Chris, when you speak about Venezuela or Zimbabwe or Weimar Germany, mm-hmm. These seem to be isolated events. Now, when it comes to what we're seeing right now with the U.S., we're in so much more of a global situation. Yeah. What the U.S. is doing, the whole entire world is doing. And you mm-hmm. alluded to that. I mean, the U.S. dollar falling against a basket of other failing currencies. Do you see that happening on a global basis, this sort of washout, or does the U.S. ultimately, does it happen here in a more isolated situation, and does the wealth transfer move elsewhere around the world? How do you see that playing out?
So I see the dollar and all these other currencies, you know, slowly falling relative to each other because they're all printing money. So it's probably not going to be as obvious. And like I said, as we see in Venezuela, but I do think it's going to form exactly in the silver market. So we've already seen in the July delivery period in the COMEX, the record amount of physical silver and gold being delivered. I mean, there was huge disparities even from March between the London Bullion Market Association and the COMEX of delivered gold. And what I think what's going to end up happening is that I think inside the dollar collapse and all these global currencies, that the precious metal markets are going to absolutely skyrocket. And they're the ones that are going to reflect the overall inflation and currency depreciation. And I don't think it's going to be as obvious as like Venezuela with the, you know, 7.4 million bolivars for an ounce of silver. But I think that we're going to see massive dollar depreciation relative to all these other currencies, but it's going to most be seen in food and fuel, and certainly the precious metals, and especially physical silver, where I think the rise in the silver price is literally going to be the greatest transference of wealth that we've ever seen in throughout history. You have to realize, Daniel, this has been a criminally manipulated market since the crime of 1873, when the banksters demonetized silver. That's what the Wizard of Oz is actually all about. The Yellow Brick Road represented the gold standard, and Dorothy's shoes inside the Wizard of Oz book was silver. And silver is our way back out of this. So they've been criminally manipulating the price of silver down. They demonetized silver in the crime of 1873 in the United States. They demonetized India. The British Empire stole $54 trillion out of India. And even two opium wars against China had directly to do with China owning 25% of the world's silver, despite not having any mines, because China was industrious citizens accumulated silver but didn't use it to go buy British finished goods. So since they've taken the silver out of our coins, out of our money, that is what's given rise to this financialization. The very idea that banks are the largest industry out there shows how far off of humanity is. They don't produce any value. They create Ponzi schemes. They create digital illusions of wealth. They find another sucker for every day for another asset class. But that only came about when they got us off of the anchor of what gold and silver, you know, once provided. There's another statistic your audience can go look at, usdebtclock.org. They have the dollar to silver ratio and a gold to silver ratio. The dollar to silver ratio back in 1913 was $2 for every ounce of silver that was out there. Right now it's at over $4,000 in newly printed money relative to all the silver that's mined in the world today. So just using US M2, we're creating $4,000 of newly printed money, just the United States, relative to all the silver mined in the world. Now that chart does not include that the silver has 50% of mining capacity has been off, which would naturally double that to $8,000 relative to all the silver that's mined in the world, and does not include China or the EU or Japan or the rest of the world. So we're potentially looking at the world is printing close to $10,000, if not $20,000 of newly printed money relative to every single ounce of silver that comes out of the ground. I mean, if this isn't a screening way of saying, hey, I want to trade all these newly printed dollars for these very rare ounces of silver that's not been properly price in the market, I don't know what else will.
So true. So true, Chris. Yeah, and it's tough for people. It's hard for us to psychologically watch what happened in the price of gold, watch what happened in the price of silver, and feel comfortable buying at these prices, you know, wanting to hold back for a pullback. And we saw that today, actually. But interesting in this environment. But in the end game, this is nothing compared to where silver and gold, in my opinion, can go from here. So, Chris, if you would, share with us some closing thoughts and tell us about your website, your YouTube channel, and what people can expect if they visit you.
Yeah, well, I have a YouTube channel. We just hit 175,000 subscribers. It's called The Greatest Truth Never Told. And you can, I basically do a daily, you know, rant about silver and whatever is going on. And I try to keep everybody up to date and keep people focused on this, because this is almost like psychological warfare. We've been geared towards, you know, thinking dollar centric, and that's what ultimately is keeping us trapped. You know, people think about the dollar price of silver. No, measure your wealth in ounces, calories, you know, things, real things, instead of, you know, future promises on wealth, which is what a dollar is. It's not worth anything until you exchange it for something real, whether it's goods or services or whatever. So having dollar, being dollar centric is actually the biggest part of the problem. You and I both know that I have my own line of silver coins called Silver Shield, which is sold exclusively at the Golden State Mint. And every week I come out with two new designs that basically categorize all the things that are going on right now. In fact, I have a design called Uncle Fear right now, which is Uncle Sam, but he's a skull saying, "I want your freedom." You know, these are kind of cool coins to have that commemorate where we are in this time period. And I really believe that these Silver Shield coins are going to be historically significant, because for the last 10 years, I've done over 750 designs categorized in the physical silver, talking about the death of the dollar and all the troubles that were going on out there, and how we can be conscious individuals who walk away from it and realize that we're the source of power. All these politicians and CEOs and generals, they are worthless without our consent. And as soon as we recognize that this is a world that we no longer want to support with our votes and views and careers and all this other, in our investments, certainly, that we can actually empower ourselves by taking our wealth outside the system, outside the failed banking system, outside the ability of the governments to be able to print currency and destroy our thing, and put it into physical silver. At some point, we will be able to redeploy that wealth into, you know, things that hopefully are more sustainable and conscious. Communities, we need to rebuild small town America again. That's what made America great. Not these big megalopolis cities. It was small town America that bred the best people out there, where, virtues and your values and your word actually meant something, because you were built around these things. And I think if we can create small town communities all over again, you know, we'll have the ability of solar power and organic food and all this other stuff, and create conscious individual solutions. But we need to have the wealth to do that. And I think silver has got this unique ability of transferring our wealth outside of this, you know, whatever this Ponzi scheme is going on now, into silver, and hopefully into a much better way of life for America, because we are going to get reborn again, and freedom has to come from America. So I don't know any other way of having freedom thrive again if we can't take our wealth outside the system and reinvest it into something better.